Hi, I'm Femi Oke. Venezuelan refugees and migrants intent on reaching the United States via land face a new challenge, deportation to Mexico. Many, due to new regulations, cannot get into the United States, and so they are stuck south of the United States border. Today on The Stream, what lies ahead in the future for the displaced migrants and refugees from Venezuela? That is our show. We look forward to you joining it. In our conversation today, we have Manuel, we have Elena. Good to have both of you with us. Manuel, will you remind our audience around the world who you are and what you do?
Hello, everybody. My name is Manuel Rapallo. I am a reporter, a correspondent for Al Jazeera covering Latin America, based in Mexico City.
Good to have you. And Elena, welcome to The Stream. Will you say hello to our viewers around the world? Tell them who you are and what you do.
Yes, hello. I'm Elena Olea. I am the Associate Director for Programs at Alianza America.
Good to have you. Our viewers around the world, if you're on YouTube, the comment section is now live for your comments. We're talking about Venezuelan migrants and refugees. Put your comments, your questions right here for our guests, Manuel, and also for Elena. I am going to start with some video that is really disturbing. I want you to understand, viewers, what is happening to many Venezuelans who are seeking safety and security in the United States. So this is U.S. agents shooting rubber bullets at Venezuelans. Have a look.
When I was in the river, they shot at me once and then again and again. They're cowards. They mistreat us because we are unarmed, poor, and working people. As everyone else, we have our rights. This is how they receive us.
Manny, the United States agents there, they were so determined not to let Venezuelans into the U.S. Is this an uptick in the way that they're being treated, or is it just that we got video this time so we can see what's happening?
I think it may be a little bit of both, because TV cameras aren't always there. They're not always present at times like this. I believe that video is from just from last month into October.
Yeah,
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, in the city of Reynosa on the other side of the border from McAllen, Texas. What we're seeing there is just basically the face of desperation. People who have been waiting on the border for several days, if not weeks, waiting for an opportunity to plead their asylum cases to U.S. officials, finding that since mid-October, since October 12th and later October 19th, when a change in policy occurred to a policy of the United States known as Title 42, that's now impacting specifically Venezuelan citizens. Mm-hmm. Anyone arriving by land is not automatically able to enter the United States. And what you're seeing is hundreds, if not thousands, of people growing desperate because they feel like they're stuck in Mexico. They've organized themselves. They've organized marches and protests, essentially begging U.S. officials to allow them to plead their asylum cases, to allow them to go through the traditional asylum process into the United States, which has been upended for the better part of the last 6 years, I would say.
So, Elena, this imposition of Title 42, which was brought in by the Trump administration, and it was behind COVID. So the Trump administration said because of COVID-19, it is dangerous for migrants, for refugees to come into the United States. So we're not even going to check to see if they are asylum seekers. We're just going to pat them straight back where they came from. Now, if they couldn't find another country, they were not able to do that. So Venezuelans were not subject to Title 42 until quite recently. And that's when Mexico said, it's okay, you can send the migrants to Mexico. Do you think a deal was done behind the scenes, Elena? How did that change?
Yes, of course. I mean, there have been ongoing deals because Title 42 needs the cooperation from Mexico to accept the expulsion of everyone who's being rejected at the border. And so at the beginning, Mexico was quite open and accepted a wide array of nationalities back into the country. And we can see that it changed when Mexico said, I am not accepting Central Americans and most South Americans back into Mexico. And then that's when the U.S. started to send them by airplane back to their countries of origin, not a deportation, but an expulsion. And it was stuck with Nicaraguans, Venezuelans, and I'm blanking on the third nationality, because it does not have diplomatic relationships with those countries, and it could not change them back.
Yes, you can't fly a US plane to Venezuela if you don't have political relations with them. This is such a political move, and Ricardo is picking up on this. Ricardo is on YouTube right now. So Ricardo says, Manny, the policy may change after the midterms, but I'm not sure how. Ricardo is putting a connection between politics and immigration. Of course, there's a connection, Manny. What do you think? Do you think this will change after the midterms?
100%. Well, will this change
100%
after the midterms?
No or yes.
Yeah, I didn't catch that last part of your question. No, 100% yes, this is politics.
Yes.
I have been visiting the migrant assistance offices or the refugee assistance offices here in Mexico City every week for the past few weeks. I recently spoke with an organizer from Doctors Without Borders, whose words specifically to me when I asked her that question were, we have seen the humanitarian consequences of politics, and it shouldn't be that way, right? And this isn't just about Title 42. Title 42, and I'll just add very quickly, that third nationality, I believe, that that Elena was talking about is Cubans. It's Venezuelans, Nicaraguans, and Cubans.
Yes,
it's very difficult for the United States to return them to their countries of origin when they don't have diplomatic ties with those countries. But in the case of Venezuelans, this the actual politics that have been affecting them date back to before Title 42, to January of this year, where Mexico began requiring that Venezuelans arriving in Mexico have visas to enter Mexico. And what this did was it made it very, very difficult for Venezuelans who previous to that were flying to Mexico and then trying to get into the United States. They're no longer able to fly here because they don't have a visa to get into Mexico. And so they're taking the long way. They're traveling by land, making their way across seven countries through very, very dangerous territory, then getting into Mexico, finding that the southern border of Mexico is now essentially the southern border of the United States, since at the request of the United States, under pressure, political pressure from the United States, Mexico has been, for lack of a better term, forced to adapt an immigration policy that is
forced. Manny, how can you say forced? How do you say forced? Eleanor's laughing. You're laughing at my naivety, Eleanor. How can you say Mexico is forced? What did the US say to Mexico? Go ahead. Eleanor, go ahead.
Well, I think we don't know what Mexico has claimed for a long time since the beginning of Title 42 was that it was forced. At the beginning, it was the threat of tariffs from the Trump administration. But now clearly there has to be some type of agreement in which it is in Mexico's best interest to be the southern border of the United States, and it is being. It's not only requesting the visas, as Manny was saying, that started at the beginning of the year, but now it's really this policy of cooperating with the expulsions. Now what Mexico is trying to do to kind of be in the middle is it has reached an agreement with Venezuela, and they are putting in place this type of voluntary return flights from Mexico back to Venezuela. And there are also new concerns about the safety and the well-being of those individuals who are returned back to Venezuela.
I'm going to bring in a new voice into our conversation. This is Carolina. And Carolina has noted that there is going to be an impact on this new policy for what happens to Venezuelan migrants and refugees. Here she is. This is what she told us earlier.
Around 7.1 million Venezuelans have fled the country in recent years. Venezuelans are fleeing a complex humanitarian emergency and a human rights crisis. This complex humanitarian emergency existed before the U.S. imposed sanctions on the country's economy, but these sanctions made the humanitarian crisis worse. Venezuelans need international protection. Unfortunately, policies implemented by the governments of the United States and Mexico recently put the life of Venezuelans, migrants, and asylum seekers at risk.
Eleanor is nodding. So this new policy, Who is it helping? Is it helping the United States keep control of its borders, or is it helping migrants and refugees who really need the help? Eleanor.
I will go back to the comment about the politics, and I think that this is very important. This is a policy that I don't think it's a matter of control of the U.S. border, but it's really falling into a political context in which immigration is now being viewed as a threat and is being used masterfully by the Republican Party. And that's really the challenge. And of course, with this policy and returning individuals who are fleeing Venezuela back to Venezuela, we really are observing that it's the breakdown of the principle of refugee protection, that no one is going to be forcibly returned to the country that they are fleeing. And this really represents a moment of crisis for international protection in the Americas.
I'm just going to go to what the Department for Homeland Security sent to us when we asked them for a comment. They sent us a very long statement. I'm going to pick out a few things from their statement. These actions are part of the Biden-Harris administration's ongoing efforts to reduce irregular migration throughout the Western Hemisphere, including the US. The United States is seeing a rising rate of Venezuelans encountered at our border over the past 2 years. Then I'm going to skip down here to $360 million in additional humanitarian assistance for people affected by the Venezuelan regional crisis. Manuel, so this policy is now in place. It means that Venezuelans, they cannot seek asylum in the United States by crossing the border by land. They have to do it by other means. They have to have a relative in the United States, and they have to do it via Mexico. So is this solving part of the issue of Venezuelans and migrants coming into the United States? Is this part of the way the US is addressing the issue? Manny's doing this with his hands, like, no!
What a frustrating question, because yeah. I wish the answer was yes. I wish
that the government thinks that it is. Or do
right,
they not?
And the rhetoric that we hear from the Biden administration tends to be one of this desire to provide humanitarian support, but the reality on the ground is far from that, right? So mm-hmm. I think right now the policies that are being put in place, for example, we were talking about Title 42, and we had that question comment from Carolina about whether or not that's going to disappear after the midterm elections. One thing that we hear from immigration policy experts overwhelmingly on both sides of the border, in the United States, here in Mexico, if there is one thing that could really take some of that pressure off of the humanitarian crisis that's playing out under this current wave of migration from Venezuelans, is comprehensive immigration reform that has to come from the U.S. Congress. If Democrats in the United States, who have controlled the House and Senate for the last 2 years, were unable to bring us comprehensive immigration reform.
Can I jump in?
In these last Yeah.
Well, I think that we also need to look at the numbers. This idea of the parole program has a cap of 24,000. That number is ridiculous. And it also reflects the lack of an integration policy. The U.S. has no policy in place to welcome asylum seekers and to offer them some basic protections. And so rather than deal and design the policy it does not have, it simply decided to continue with the externalization of borders that the Trump administration put in place. And that was a promise that this administration was not going to put in place. I also think that the idea of comprehensive immigration reform represents a political challenge of such magnitude, particularly today that we are in elections. We know that that's almost going to be impossible. So it also seems to be necessary to start thinking about smaller, concrete reforms that can actually and hopefully pass Congress. Otherwise, the system continues to be unable to respond to the challenges that a country like the U.S. is going to be facing in immigration coming forward.
Let me bring in Aaron's voice here, because Aaron was thinking about what immigration reform would look like. And he spoke to us a few hours ago. Here he is. And then, Manny, just bounce off the back of Aaron.
For the time being, there are still thousands of Venezuelans south of the border assessing their options and deciding what to do. Hundreds have already made the decision to travel back home, taking advantage of buses and planes provided by Panama, Guatemala, and Mexico. Others still are going to make the decision to come to the United States, but without seeking asylum and instead intending to cross the border irregularly and hope that they're not taken into custody. But regardless, when we consider the scale of what is happening at the border right now, Venezuelans find themselves caught in a political morass. Despite the Biden administration's commitment to supposedly restoring humanitarian protection at the border, right now Venezuelans find themselves cut off from the possibility of asylum.
So there's a lot of important things that were said there just now. The one thing that stuck out to me was this commitment made by the Biden administration to provide a humanitarian approach, one thing that we hadn't seen previous to the Biden administration during the 4 years of the Trump administration. And what unfortunately is happening is that with Title 42, for example, we keep bringing up Title 42. Title 42 was essentially put in place during the pandemic as a health measure at the height of the worst of the COVID-19 emergency. But who's really used it and abused it, I would say, is the Biden administration. The Biden administration has been using Title 42 as a pretext to conduct express deportations. What is an express deportation? It's when you take an asylum seeker or a migrant who's trying to plead an asylum case to a U.S. immigration official, but they are not given that due process. They are detained, they're held for a few days, and then they're expelled to Mexico. The problem that we're seeing here in Mexico is that even though this is, by all accounts, a bilateral agreement between the U.S. and Mexico for Mexico to be taking in all these migrants that the United States doesn't want, is that Mexico doesn't have a plan for these people. So yes, there's a need for immigration reform, and when we're talking about maybe doing the right thing at a smaller level, with Title 42, what about migrant children? What about unaccompanied minors who form a major part of the overall migration phenomenon? What about people who are unable to find a sponsor in the United States? Mexico is not prepared to house these tens of thousands of people. Let me just throw a couple of numbers your way, because the overall migration trend, the overall migration profile of Mexico has completely changed over these last few years. In 2015, there were 3,500 asylum requests in Mexico. Mexico is a country of migration. There's people that transit through the country. There's people that are internally displaced and also add to the migration flow in the United States. It's also a country that helps asylum seekers and provides a refuge for people who are seeking it. But that was 3,500 people in 2015. Last year, there were 130,000 requests for asylum in Mexico, and this year we're expecting to reach somewhere around 200,000 requests for asylum in Mexico. Mexico, Manny, as the government, does not have the resources to provide assistance to all these people.
Manny, you sent us an example of what not having those resources looks like. So you spoke to people who were and who are in Mexico. They are refugees, they're migrants, they would like to be in the United States, but instead they are stuck, and this is what they told you earlier.
We're outside the refugee assistance office. They're helping us out with a permit to remain in Mexico City. We're waiting to see what opportunities we're given. We're all waiting here, as you can see. Many people here sleeping on the street, like myself, waiting for people to come by and bring us help, blankets, something to eat. There are pregnant women here. It's been difficult. I've been here for several days waiting for an answer.
We arrived in Mexico City, and we have nowhere to stay. The shelters are completely full. I've asked, and they tell me that they can't take in any more people. We've been through very painful situations, and now we've been forced to sleep on the street.
Elena, what did you want to add? I know you had a thought. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think it's also important to underscore safety in Mexico. And we are aware, and there are a number and plenty of reports about how unsafe Mexico is, parts of the territory that are controlled by criminal organizations. And that's also another layer of threat and of suffering that the Venezuelan people are having to endure. And if Mexico accepted the deal with the United States, it definitely needed the resources and to increase its capacity in its refugee agency. And what we know is that that is not the case. Another level of problem is also that Mexico continues every single month to increase its record of number of persons who are in detention. Most of these Venezuelans are detained, and it's only in detention when they have a chance to talk to someone and to explain that they want to seek asylum. So that's also another level of danger, threat and suffering that the Venezuela people are experiencing. And I think we need to see that as well.
Elena and Manny, we have a lot of response online and not of all of it is empathetic. So I would like you, I'm going to throw a few ideas at you, instant response, because I think this can be an educational process for all of our viewers and all of us. So CopCon says it is dangerous everywhere. Stay in your own country. Elena, you say to CopCon what?
I would say it's not danger that in every country. Danger is different. And we have to consider both the political repression, the economic sanctions and criminality in Venezuela to understand why Venezuelans flee.
Andy says everyone should have the right to migrate wherever they want to be and be safe and happy. We are helping Venezuelans in Peru. Manny?
I think that countries across Latin America have opened their doors to Venezuelan migrants. The problem is that not all countries in Latin America are in a position where they can help. There are many countries who are facing their own crises. There are many countries where work opportunities may have existed for Venezuelans in the past, and those opportunities, as of the COVID-19 emergency, have disappeared. They've dissipated, and they've forced another wave of displacement, which is why we're seeing migrants from Venezuela seeing little other option other than to seek refuge in the United States.
There's a lot of conversation about Venezuela being a beautiful country. Why can't people live in Venezuela? Elena, again, is this something that is not being communicated well to our viewers, to citizens around the world who do not understand why Venezuelans will go through a dire journey in order to go via land to get to Mexico to seek asylum in the United States? What else do you need to tell them?
I think that the problem is that the crisis in Venezuela has been going on for a long time, and it has definitely lost presence in the media. But it's both a political crisis, but it's also an economic crisis, very much impacted by the economic sanctions. And we know that economic sanctions do not work, but they continue to use that diplomatic tool at the expense of the population. And with other crises in other parts of the world, we really have lost Venezuela from the radar. But it is an ongoing crisis. As a viewer commented, more than 7 million Venezuelans have been forced to flee their country. And many of them have tried to settle in Latin America, but precisely because of the economic conditions and the lack of integration programs, many of them are simply not able to survive with some level of basic dignity, you know, and well-being. And that's what's pushing many of them to the north.
All right, Manny, I'm going to end on one more voice, because we've been talking about people who left their own country, not because they wanted to, but they felt that they had to. And I think it's really interesting, even though many are stuck in Mexico right now, that they have no intention, regardless of what our viewers are saying, of going back home. You spoke to one gentleman who was very adamant about not going home. Here he is.
I would have liked to continue the goal I had in mind of reaching the United States, becoming established, finding work, and giving my son a good education. But if this is no longer possible, I can't pass up the opportunity that Mexico is giving us. If I have to remain here, I'll remain here, but I'm not returning to Venezuela. I don't want to live under the regime. It's too much for Venezuelans. Venezuelans are not migrating because it's a luxury to reach the US. We're migrating for a better quality of life, which unfortunately we have not found in other countries in Latin America, because the economy is not stable. There are many countries in crisis, only that some have it worse than others.
So I can't think of three people I'd rather have had this conversation with. You, audience, excellent. Appreciate you, Elena, and also Manny as well. It's not often that we get to spend a full 25 minutes wrestling with such a complicated issue of Venezuelan migrants and refugees trying to leave their home country and seeking asylum. Thanks for watching, everybody. I will see you next time. Take care.